Warning, this is the Freedom Fiends midweek non-radio podcast. Unlike our weekend live talk radio shows, where we adhere to all regulations and community standards, this cast may contain cussing and or prurient subject matter. If you are easily offended, please leave now. But tune in Saturdays and Sundays to our live talk radio show. If you're not easily offended, prepare to be entertained, informed, and enlightened.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedomfiends.com.
So, Nima Vedati, how you doing?
Doing well, Michael Dane. How are you?
Good. Are you standing up or sitting down?
Standing up.
And that's not me. That usually sounds like you're going to give someone like devastating information. Are you standing up or sitting down? To me, it means, is Nima talking into his microphone? Because it's at standing level.
Yes.
Yes. So we are becoming a rock and roll interview show this weekend and next weekend for some reason.
Apparently. Well, you wanted to go in a new direction with the Fiends, or at least an additional direction. I don't know if we're changing our route or just adding another stop on the trip. But you want to interview people who aren't interviewed on the normal libertarian talk show circuit. People who are nonetheless interesting and maybe a little bit quirky.
Yeah, and they're definitely not people that are interviewed on talk radio. We have three interviews coming up. This weekend we have two coming up. We have Luna, which is a activist band from Moscow, Russia, which is hella cool to me. And then Sunday, I need to sit down for this one. We're doing an hour, we're doing an hour with Brendan Small, the creator of Death Clock. I'm going to ask him to voice a,
this is Nathan Explosion. You're listening to the Freedom Fiends.
Yeah.
I want to ask everyone to voice.
It wouldn't be that excited though. It'd be the.
I know, because he has to do public speaking, he looks like he'd rather be taking a poop.
Yeah, and that's how I feel when I do public speaking. It's just I don't look that way.
when he's doing his inauguration as governor of Florida, he looks like he'd rather be taking a poop. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean that's a very nice, relaxing time for most people.
Mm-hmm. So Brendan Small, he created the show, he writes the music, he plays the guitar and drums and sings on it. No, not drums, everything but drums. And he voices a lot of the characters on there, and he voices three-fifths of the band. He voices Nathan, Pickles the drummer. I can't even do him. Pickles the drummer.
Pickles.
And
Squisgart.
I think I'd like to see if we could get Squisgart to do a Fiends promo.
That would be awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, and then
he also has another show called Home Movies. I guess it doesn't exist anymore, but
love it.
That was his first offering for Adult Swim, and he voiced the kid. I mean, it's kind of like
it's him.
Semi-autobiographical.
Yeah,
yeah. Brendan Small is the name of the kid.
Yeah,
yeah, and he voices this little tiny kid who in the show is like doesn't even come
He's
up
seven.
To his mom's
He's
knee.
7 years old.
Yeah, that's the same guy who voices Nathan Explosion.
I know. And as if this isn't enough excitement, next Sunday, the 20th of October, we're interviewing Hank III, also known as Hank Williams III.
Yeah. Why does he go by Hank III? Does he think that's like hip and cool? Or
it is hip and cool.
It sounds a lot cooler than the third. I will definitely
Well, I actually
that.
Heard he goes by three, that you, Just you three? Address him by three. Yes.
Ah, okay.
He
Maybe
is,
it's a shout out to Ender's Game.
Yep.
Ender was the third. No, Ender was the third, not three. Maybe
but
the,
he doesn't talk. He doesn't talk politics. He said, because you know his dad like lost millions of dollars in revenue, and because his dad Hank Williams Jr. said a while back on Fox News, he compared Obama to Hitler, and Monday Night Football immediately pulled the Hank Williams Jr. song "Are You Ready for Some Football," which had been on that for like 20 years, hadn't it?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was their song.
Some long amount of time. It's how everybody knew Monday Night Football, man. Mm-hmm. It was like ubiquitous. I don't think they should have pulled it, but I guess they have to, because if you go after the commander in chief and you're in a football promotional kind of thing, I mean, what football's all about promoting the military, right? All the commercials and,
yeah.
and halftime shows.
And it's also like nationalism for your city.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you like football. You used to play football, but You don't, so you don't criticize, we don't criticize football the way football, like the way, you know, skinny kids who got beat up and or punk rockers go, football, that's for big jock faggots. But, you know.
I like the sport. Right. I like the game and it's fun to watch. I can't stand all of the militarism in the commercials and the posturing. And I guess that's sports in general because you have to go and stand up for the national anthem and support the troops and yeah. all this kind of stuff.
And I have no problem with comparing Obama to Hitler. I mean, I would have compared Obama to Stalin and also compared George Bush 1 and 2 to Stalin, to be more accurate.
Right.
But, yeah.
Right.
But, yeah, so and Hank 3's reaction to that was really kind of smart. I've never heard a musician say this. He said, there's no musicians that should speak about that are smart enough to speak about politics, including my dad, the only, or like knowledgeable enough to speak about politics. The only musician who's smart enough to talk about politics is Jello Biafra.
Ew.
I know we have problems with Jello, but that's a lot more enlightened than any country singer I've ever heard say anything, except for Johnny Cash, maybe.
Yeah, it just really bugs me that kind of a mentality because I think you give politicians and people who talk about politics and political scientists way too much credit because you make it seem like they're the vanguard, you know, like the old communist vanguard.
Well, Jello's an expert.
Philosopher king.
Jello's an expert in things that are wrong. I mean, in the same way that like I think that I have more that's true to say about economics than most PhDs in economics who are Keynesian economics. People.
Right.
You know, but that would sound like crazy talk to most people. Like, oh, you're a high school dropout. You think you know more than a doctorate. But, you know, Jello, I can see why Hank 3 or anybody who's not politically, who's not us, you know, who's not libertarian or ANCAP, why anybody like that would say that Jello is one of the only musicians or the only musician that's smart enough to talk about politics. Because Jello is very knowledgeable about politics. He just reaches a wrong conclusion. He brings it to you need a state but a different party, you know, the Green Party.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and Jello brings up facts and situations and historical events that most people don't think about or wouldn't think to bring
Jello's,
up in a situation.
Jello's as smart as as knowledgeable as Scott Horton on geopolitical world situations and history, but he comes to the wrong conclusion and Scott Horton comes to the right conclusion.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, but
I'll accept that.
Here's what I really like about what Hank 3 said, about what 3 said. And it's not like Elvis Presley who said, "Oh, I don't have an opinion on that, ma'am. I'm just an entertainer," which means like, "Watch me dance, massa," you know?
"Watch me dance,
massa." It really is. It's like I'm a slave to the entertainment industrial complex and you know, I didn't want to get shot at, so I joined the military and put on a uniform as a recruiting tool and then went over and did USO shows and never saw combat, which is what he did in the Vietnam War. But when asked about the Vietnam War, Elvis was like, I don't know, ma'am, I'm just an entertainer. But Hank 3 didn't say, I'm just an entertainer. He said, you know, I don't know enough about it, and most musicians don't know enough about it, which is three quarters of the way there, because most musicians don't know shit and think they have to say something anyway, and they're wrong, you know?
Right. Yeah, and they just end up saying retarded talking points that their publicists told them to say, and it reminds me of Tim the Tool Man Taylor on that show he did, Home Improvement, where Wilson would tell him something smart and go home and tell his wife, and he'd just butcher it. Like when Britney Spears was talking about George Bush, and she's like, "I just think he's a lot smarter than us, and we should follow him so he can be safe."
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Jello Biafra isn't working off of – when he talks about politics, he isn't working off his publicist's notes. I mean, Jello Biafra does seven-hour talking spoken word shows. He literally – Jello – and they're mostly political. I mean, he literally does spoken word shows – where like they close the club and like close the curtains on him. You know, like, he's supposed to do a 2-hour appearance and like five and a half hours later, he's still up there talking and it's like everyone wants to go home, but half the audience is still listening.
Right.
Yeah.
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 Worms.
Okay. So let's do some insider baseball here and share with the fiends our process for getting together to do these interviews. All right. So, let's see. I think the Russian people, we should compliment them on their nation's rifles. They make good rifles.
The Mosin-Nagants. Yeah, yeah, I would totally agree. Yeah. And the AK-47. Yeah, mm-hmm. I forget about that one sometimes because I don't have one. We should ask them, too, if they're gun people, you know? If you grow up in Russia, do you get to practice with the Mosin-Nagant at recess? Go. Like, is that one of the PE classes?
Are you gun people? Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of get the feeling that the American guy isn't that we're interviewing. Now, we're interviewing – we're not interviewing the cute girl that sings. We're interviewing the guitar player, Ruben, who has a master's from Moscow University in political science and is – I don't think he's libertarian necessarily, but he's – I talked to him a little bit today. He's liberty thinking. He thinks about liberty a lot. And they're
thinks
very
about it a lot.
Well, they're very well. That's what we do. We just yak about it.
Yeah.
But they're very anti Putin. They're very anti being told what to do. You know, it. I don't know. A lot of their songs are in Russian. I need to check out more of their English songs. They have their new record that they're in support of now is in English, and the lyrics were written by an American who speaks Russian who lives in Moscow with them, and we're interviewing him too. So we're not interviewing the girl. She's going shopping, and we're going to interview the other guys.
Now, you say they aren't fans of Putin. I want to know what they think of Putin's response to Barack Obama, his handling of the Syria crisis, and Putin's statements that, come on, America, quit calling yourselves exceptional. That's dangerous because then you think that you have a higher you have a different moral law than everybody else in the world.
Okay, I was typing and I got talk about Putin's response to Obama. What do I put after that?
No, just we'll know how to riff on it.
Okay. And I also want to ask him what they think of Obama.
Yeah, there you go.
Because, I mean, they may like him, they may hate him. I don't know. There is an American opinion that all of Europe and the rest of the world besides America loves Obama. And that is not true. And I'm curious
that
what
may have been true at the beginning of the first term, but not now that all the Glenn Greenwald stories from Edward Snowden's leaks have come out and people in Germany know that the Americans are spying on them all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, that would be good to get some actual perspective from Europeans. Are Russians Europeans?
Sort of. I think it's called Eurasia is the continent, but I think they consider themselves or are considered Europeans.
We could ask them.
Okay. Didn't they have because they had a westernization movement at some point in their history, didn't they, where they were trying to get rid of people who wore beards because having beards was more of an Eastern thing. So
oh,
they had a
I know what to
tax.
Ask them about. I saw something a few years ago about how there were like old people there who are pining for Stalin. Have you heard about that?
No, I haven't heard that. I've heard people in Eastern European countries like Romania. No, maybe it was Romania. I don't remember. But old Soviet bloc Eastern European countries complaining about how American style or Western style corporatocracy is worse for them than communism because they didn't get any of the good parts of democracy or capitalism. They just got, you know, the crony kleptocracy that the Americans imposed.
Well, there's people that pine for Stalin because, and it wasn't even like a, well, at least he made the trains run on time. It's like they miss the pageantry and the glory that came with Soviet Russia.
The Mother Russia.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Okay. The tanks and the parades and the giant missiles and all that kind of good stuff.
The tanks were so much prettier than the Bearcats. I'm sure they have some kind of Bearcats there now. Those are pretty much everywhere.
Well, they could still do parades. Mm-hmm. I guess as long, you know, why don't they just all donate to a parade fund? And they can bring up all the old military surplus and have big parades. If all the state did was do parades, man, that would be ideal.
Okay. I want to ask him if libertarianism is a thing in Russia, like by that name or by some other name.
Okay. Okay.
I want to ask him if they're anarchists. Do they know any anarchists? Do they know any anarcho-capitalists in Russia?
Ask him if they're fans of Yuri Maltsev.
Who's that?
He's a Russian, Austrian economist. He actually worked for the Soviet Union, and he came across
– he saved the great works of the great men of liberty.
No, but I think his story is the Politburo or whatever, whoever his Soviet bosses were having him research American or Western literature on economics. And he came across – I can't remember if it was Hayek or somebody of that effect. And he was like, wait, all this stuff is true. And so he defected, came to America, and now he works for the Mises Institute.
How do you spell it?
Yuri is Y-U-R-I. Maltsev is M-A-L-T-S-E-V.
Okay. Yuri Maltsev. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I will ask them if they are fans of Yuri Maltsev. And you can,
there you go.
You can explain it to them. I'll be like, well, I don't know. Ben Stone said something about it. I forget. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. Nations Rifles. Are you gun people? I want to ask the guy about the Armenian genocide because he had relatives in it.
Ah, yeah. And you were actually really keen to find that out because his last name had this – it ended in I-A-N?
Yeah. Y-A-N. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And you recognize that that was a Russian-Armenian.
Because I lived in Glendale, California. You were like, wow, Michael, you're so knowledgeable. How do you know these things? And I'm like, because I lived for 4 months in Glendale, and every store is a name, person's name that ends in IAN or.
Oh, really? IAN. Glendale?
Yeah. Oh.
It's strange to me how certain places, just random places, become hubs of other nationalities. I guess because one person happens to move there, and then they bring their family and friends over and say, hey, yeah, come out here. It's a community.
What year did the Soviet Union fall? Was that the same time as the Berlin Wall, or a few years after, or a few years before?
Let's see.
Because these, like, I think these guys were.
Late 80s, early 90s.
These guys were little kids. I think they were alive. Because they look. Between 25 and 30. They're not young pups. Soviet Union, 1991.
We'll see.
Yeah.
The dissolution, yeah, December, 26th December 1991. So it was a Christmas present of.
So it was 22 years ago. So they were like, you know, between 4 and 8. So they'll remember it. I want to ask them about that. I think that's.
I'm also curious, what are the public schools like in the current. How do the public schools there discuss the history, the Soviet history? You know, is it – do they gloss over things? Do they ignore it? Do they talk about it as a glorious past? How do they come down on that?
Should also ask them about Putin. Like, what's the
– Yeah, yeah.
Well, and, we did. Putin's response to Obama, but just Putin in general. I mean, I know they're going to say. I've already heard things they've said about Putin, but I'd like to hear extrapolations on it.
Right. And also, the homophobia of the Russian state—that's controversial right now. And I'm sure, as young hip activist rock band, they've probably got things to say about that.
Yeah, Putin, homophobia.
Putin and homos.
Yeah.
There we go.
The singer in this band has an interesting opinion, and it's interesting to me because it's my opinion. We're not interviewing her, but the American guy I talked to had the exact same opinion. A lot of people ask her about Pussy Riot, which I think we should call Kitty Riot because we're on all these conservative stations if we mention it.
And
we'll make a joke of it. Kitty Riot. But her basic take on it, and this is exactly what I told my wife like a month ago when we watched this interview about Pussy Riot on TV. I said, man, they can't sing. They're not fucking musicians, but I like what they do. And I think it was kind of rude what they did in the church, but they shouldn't be in jail. Like in Libpair, that'd be a $200 fine for trespassing, you know, for disrupting some private property.
Right.
Yeah. And that's like almost exactly what she said. And the guy, the American that we're interviewing, Travis, like totally agreed with that. So, yes, let's ask people who agree with us to agree with us on the radio.
There you go.
Yeah. Kitty Riot.
Kitty Riot. You think they'll get it?
I like that better.
We're going to have to explain that in a pregame.
The American will get it.
Okay.
I told
him. How do you say Pussy Riot in Russian? Like, is it actual?
It's Pussy Riot.
A legit translation?
I think they call it Pussy Riot. I think in the movie they were wearing T-shirts and it was in English. You know, English is so a second language in the Western world that it's often used, you know, as shorthand for things like because especially since if you're a European band and you tour and play. I mean, Pussy Riot didn't tour. They got thrown in prison before they got a chance to. But, you know, like the band that we're interviewing, Luna, L-O-U-N-A, you know, they tour all over Europe. I'm sure that they end up speaking a lot of English to people, because if you're in Germany one night and Prague the next night and Moscow and England, you know, everybody you talk to is going to speak a little English, but they're not going to all speak those other languages.
Right.
Although most
sort
people
of a
in
global
Europe,
lingua franca.
Yeah, most people in Europe speak a little bit of their, you know, speak their own language well, speak some English, and then usually speak another language at least, because they actually teach you things in school there.
Right. Kind of the way English became the main language in India, because there were just so many other regional languages.
Oh, is that why?
Everybody just decided, hey, well, we can all speak English.
It was also an English
colony.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, for a long time.
Yeah. So I think we got enough on them. Let's go on to Death Clock.
Death Clock.
So, you know, we have that board op Tom. It always makes Death Clock jokes to us between commercials and just lives and loves Death Clock. As soon as I heard we had this interview, I called him up today at GCN and I said, "Hey Tom, you working this weekend?" He's like, "Nope." And I told him what we're doing. He's like, "Dude," and I was like, "You can be the board op if you want." He's like, "I'm going to trade shifts with somebody."
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm definitely. That's probably the interview I'm most excited about, because it's probably the people. It's definitely the people we're interviewing, of them, the dude who I consume the most of his media.
Yeah. I'm pretty psyched about Hank 3. I'm psyched about all three of them, actually. And it's pretty
cool.
Yeah, me too. But I'm pretty excited about Hank 3. I know enough of his music to be able to describe him and it to people, and I understand his lineage and people's reaction to it. I mean, basically, there's three Hanks. Hank Williams, Hank Williams Jr., and Hank 3. They actually did a record called Three Hanks when Hank Jr. was like 16 or something. But Hank 1 is dead now. Now, Hank 3 is a spitting image of Hank 1. Hank 2 looks totally different, but Hank 1 and Hank 3 looks just like Hank 1. And Hank 1 was country, straight up country, like Johnny Cash, like old school, you know, like 1920s through 1970s, 80s, whatever, country. And his son was kind of, you know, Hank Jr. kind of did what they called countrypolitan and country. Countrypolitan was like, you know, Glenn Campbell, kind of like commercialization, what they called the Bakersfield sound, you know, like a little bit of rock production in country music, which led to what they have today, which I don't even recognize as country. It's like bad rock pop. You know, what they have on TV,
country music channel. But people of today's country would probably think of Hank Jr. as old school too, and more similar to his dad than to, I don't know, Florida Georgia Line or something like that.
And Hank 3 does some kind of straight up country, but he also does like balls out punk rock. Like he did a record with G.G. Allin. He did a record with Anti-Scene, who are like a libertarian, good old boy, raucous punk rock kind of Stooges kind of band from I think North Carolina. Bomb opened for him one time, I know that. But so he's kind of his own breed, man, and he takes a lot of shit
for
it.
Well, you were saying he does two sets whenever he plays live. He'll play a country set and then I guess intermission and then a punk rock set.
Punk rock and rock and roll and rock and just fast, kind of like
psychobilly.
But he's also really like reverential in a really cool way of both his dad and his grandpa. And he's involved in, I want to ask him about this. He's involved in, it's a website called reinstatehank.org. Basically, Hank Williams, was kind of like banned from the Grand Ole Opry, like in his lifetime for I don't know what, like carrying on or doing something. And, you know, after he died, like now in the gift shop there, they sell all sorts of memorabilia of Hank 1, and they have all sorts of like, you know, impersonators of Hank 1. And, but his band still exists. And Hank 3 is trying to get enough signatures on a petition to get the Grand Ole Opry to reinstate Hank 1.
Seriously.
Posthumously. Yeah.
I can't understand why they wouldn't, unless there's some kind of personal vendetta between the owners of the Grand Ole Opry and actually Hank Williams. Because like every country song, even the modern poppy country songs, I would say like 50% or some high percent will reference Hank Williams, you know?
Well, yeah, there's a Chris
Leonard and some old Hank.
There's also a Kris Kristofferson song that's like, if you don't like, it's called If You Don't Like Hank Williams, and it's about the first Hank Williams, and it's like, if you don't like Hank Williams, it's not fuck you, but it's like, you know, something, go to hell or whatever. And Hank 3 does that song live. I've seen a video of him doing it. Nice. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife was really excited about the Hank 3 interview. She's a big fan of country, and she doesn't know a whole lot of Hank 3, but she loves Hank Williams Jr.
I saw it. So she liked
she
it.
Totally
she liked it on Facebook.
Oh, I'm sure she did. Yeah. Yep. And she also – we talk about country a lot because she's a big country fan. And she wants us to talk to Hank 3 about what he thinks about sort of the country culture and how that plays out in the pop country lyrics. You know, Hank Williams Jr. has a song that says, "Why do you roll smoke?" You know, why do you – reference to weed. And nowadays they'll bleep out even tangential references to pot. Like there's a Zac Brown Band song where he says sitting on the beach with a big roll a big fat one, and they won't even let him say roll a big fat one.
Okay.
On the radio, you know, they
yeah
block it out.
Hank 3 does that song too, family tradition. He does that with okay. slightly different words. I mean, it's not
oh, I bet.
It's
yeah.
not about I don't even want to say it's not about transmissions and crocodiles.
Yeah, okay. That's still a huge hit. The people play it at parties in Texas. I play it at almost every wedding I do. If it's one of those weddings out in the sticks where the girls, the bridesmaids wear cowboy boots, I have to play that song, and everybody sings along.
Should we get Hank 3 to do a liner for you to play when you're doing weddings that says, "This is Hank Williams III, and you're listening to Nima Vidotti DJ your wedding."
Ah, yeah.
Although,
that would be awesome,
although
actually.
It depends on the wedding in Texas, that might get you thrown out, because there are people who like Hank 1 and don't like Hank 2 or 3, and vice versa in all mathematical formulations of that possibility.
That's true.
I think still it'd be cool as heck.
Well, if they hate him that much, they'd put him on the do not playlist, and I just wouldn't play the
okay.
liner.
Do not play liners, but yeah, okay.
Yes.
This is Hank 3, and you're listening to – I want to have everybody do one that says you're listening to the Freedom Fiends Worms, but right, I won't have them say Worms on your wedding DJ one. You're listening to – what is your DJ name? Do you have it, or do you just use your name?
Well, with the company I do now, it's just DJ Nima V, but I'm actually going to have to change it for for the more expensive, higher-paying company. They don't want clients to find all of my political stuff. I don't even want to call it political stuff, but that's sort of the generic language that people call it. I mean, I don't consider myself a political talk guy, but so they don't see the Freedom Fiends. I'm going by James DePaul.
James
is
DePaul?
My middle name, and, DePaul is my mom's maiden name.
All right.
But yeah, I'm really curious to talk to Hank though about how he feels about country, because you know, country of like Hank Williams, like not even Junior, but just Hank Williams Day. You know, there was like outlaw country. And
okay,
it was
tell me what
it was,
to type.
It was gritty, right?
Tell me what to type for the question.
Just the cultural change in between old country and new country. Is it more pussified? Is it more politically correct?
Okay,
kiddified.
I'm sure he'll have a lot to say about that, because he is kind of the dictionary definition among the PC country people of what they don't want to be associated with, I think. Mm-hmm. Although they probably secretly listen to him.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let me find that part. I want to ask him what he thinks of modern country.
Yeah, definitely. Because I was never a real country fan, and the only way I got into listening to it with my wife was listening to the old stuff. You know, because the new stuff is all about supporting the troops, and thank God for those people who sacrifice for us.
Well, Hank 3,
remember when the towers fell?
Hank 3 has played at military installations. I don't know if he's done a USO tour, but I saw an awesome picture of him like standing outside of a military base. It looks like he's standing outside of a prison, though. It's just him standing outside some barbed wire fence. But the caption said it was him. It was him having just played at some military base, and he's wearing a jacket that has like a Misfits button on it. I'm also sending Fiends buttons to all these people. The people on tour, I'm sending them ahead to where they're going to be next week. And I'll find out Brandon's in the pregame or the postgame or whatever. We'll find out Brandon's business address and send them to him. Let's take a break, man.
Okay.
This is Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends. Using government-printed funny money fuels and encourages wars abroad, and the wars at home against you and all you hold dear. Why should you remain beholden to self-appointed federal kings who don't care if you starve in a cage? Become your own king today by owning gold and silver from Midas Resources. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Midas Resources banner over on the right, or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech as hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
If you like tranny hookers and shooting crocodile, tune in to freedomfiends.com.
Nima V.
Yeah,
yo,
it's me.
So we're interviewing Brendan Small, the creator of Metalocalypse and Death Clock.
Metalocalypse.
The greatest rock group of all time. The greatest rock musical group of all time and the seventh largest economy in the world. Rock musical group. That's what my dad said, right?
Yeah. He said, Nima, did you know that Michael was in a rock musical group? Or maybe it was rock musical band.
I like rock musical group better. I'm going to introduce Brendan Small as the creator of Death Clock, the greatest rock musical group of all time. I like
okay.
that.
Okay.
Yeah. And
although rock musical group sounds like a mutual fund for rock musicians.
Wu-Tang Investments.
Wu-Tang, yes.
We got the hottest hard drives.
Diversify your bonds.
Yo, yeah.
The hardest hard drives, nice.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. All right, listen, I want to mention to him that we dig home movies, his show, because it wasn't nearly as big as Death Clock. It's also kind of like saying, hey, I was into you when you were still playing clubs, you know?
Yeah, well, we are the Liberty Hipsters.
We are.
Apparently.
Okay, here's a few questions. You have a question about how black metal bass... blast beats are created and recorded. That's a music question.
Yes,
I would save that for last because you are curious about that, but basically you can look that up on Wikipedia. I'd love to hear his take up on it. But
well, I want to know why he thinks they're so popular. Like, why is that the thing?
Okay. The questions I have for him are, this one's kind of long, but it's, I told Luna that we kind of do less of an interview and more of like, we ask you, like, basically saying we have longer follow-ups than, yeah, cool, like most interviewers, you know, but I said in 70s movies that are anti-utopian and take place in the not-too-distant future, i.e. now, the villain is often a giant untouchable corporation with its own army. It seems like Death Clock is kind of a giant untouchable corporation with his own army, but they're not villains, they're the heroes. Do you like that kind of 70s movie, and how did that influence Metalocalypse?
Yeah. Are they the heroes? Aren't they kind of like anti-heroes?
Yeah.
I mean, they do bad things. Their stuff isn't enviable. You just kind of go along for the ride and laugh at them. That's how I watch Metalocalypse. I mean, nobody wants to be Murderface, you know?
Murderface, you know, his physicality is based on the bass player in Black Sabbath.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was he an ugly dude? Murderface.
They could be in the same lineup, put it that way. Okay. The guy in Black Sabbath is more handsome, but he has the same mustache, same shape face, same haircut, and he's a bass player. And he's in Black fucking Sabbath.
Right.
Let's see. Okay, Spinal Tap. Everyone knows that Spinal Tap is an influence on Spinal Tap. Did the Partridge Family and the Monkees influence the show? I want to ask him about Gwar too, and then tell him about the stitches I have in my head from Dave Brocky hitting me with a bass.
All right.
There's I don't know how political he is. I couldn't find anything about it. I kind of have a feeling it's going to be somewhere between I'm just an entertainer and politics are dumb. But I want to ask him. And there's a DVD extra on one of their DVDs that's like the band is doing interviews. And they ask about politics. And they're all like, politics, you're fucking stupid, man. And I want to say that, and is that how you feel, and can you elaborate? Can you put a name on your political worldview? And then we'll take it from there.
Okay.
I also want to ask him about the tribunal. You know, like, do you really think there is one of those, or is that just conspiracy stuff?
Are you talking about the tribunal of all the power elite sitting in the war room talking about what Metalocalypse is doing?
What Death Clock is doing?
Or what Death Clock is doing.
Yeah, and trying to, like, steer them with an invisible hand.
Right. Okay.
I want to say the guns are pretty accurate in your show compared to a lot of TV, though I had to have the band keep their finger off the trigger until they're ready to shoot. Are you a gun guy? And then we'll go off that. I want to ask him if he's a cat guy, because Toki's cat funeral makes me weep, and very few things make me weep.
Oh, yes. I forgot about that episode.
Goodbye, sweet friend. I think we should also ask him if the guys in Death Clock are different sides of him or just some of them.
Yeah, like how he came up with the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should also ask him if he has any upcoming projects with H. John Benjamin.
I do want to ask him about the future. Now, I looked this up. Apparently, there aren't going to be more episodes of Death Clock, but there's going to be a one-hour movie that's coming out this month, and that's the end
Blood
of it.
Blood Ocean?
No. Good one.
An ocean. An ocean of blood.
Doomstar Requiem.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. And I guess ask him what's next. What's next? What's next? We need an address to send him buttons. We send him to everyone we interview. Can you do an ID for us? Either Nathan's voice or Squiscar or Pickles or his own voice. You know, this is Nathan. This is Nathan. I can't do it. This is Nathan Explosion. I want to hear Nathan Explosion say worms, basically. Worms!
Worms.
Yeah.
You always put way too much energy in your Nathan Explosion.
I know. He's really...
he's kind of lazy.
He really is. He really is. I love his acceptance speech when he's governor of Florida.
Oh, yeah. What does he say?
You guys elected me to govern this shithole. I'm going to cover the fuck out of this shithole. And then when he's giving a commencement speech at, like, Harvard or something, he's like, in a few years, most of you will move back with your parents and then eventually die. I didn't go to college, and I'm a billionaire.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
Maybe we should ask him, like, if he gets satisfaction from people that made fun of him and said he'd be nothing. Because, you know, I have a feeling we should ask if people did that. But I have a feeling they did based on his characters. They're all like people that seem like they were bullied.
Right, right. How Death Clock always calls everybody else regular jackoffs.
Yes.
All those regular jackoffs. Jackoffs. Yeah.
Did you go to your high school reunion? Yeah, and if any, we can fiend source some of this. No promises, but if anybody has any brilliant questions for Luna or Hank 3 or Brandon Small and hear this on Wednesday or before this weekend, send us an email for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
At freedomfiends.com. Do you have any more questions for Brandon you can think of?
Not right now, but I'm sure more will float to the top of my blood ocean.
And it's Brendan. A lot of people say Brandon. Brendan. I've actually said it by accident. I looked it up. Brandon is like 10 times more common of a name than Brendan.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Brendan. Right. I think I've always called him Brendan. Brendan Small.
Okay. So you got any more before I send this off to you?
No. Go ahead and shoot it.
Okay. Let's see. Hank 3. Luna. Hank, 3, Death Clock, interview questions. All right, I'm sending it to you. You know, so if I'm hit by a bus and die in a blood ocean before these interviews.
Okay, fair enough.
Fair enough. That sounds like murder face. Go ahead, do it.
I don't know if I could do murder face. You have to, Nathan Explosion.
Yeah, he kind of has a lisp. He has a lisp. It's not homo though sounding. It's like it's
I can do. I do cocaine.
I watched a bunch of Death Clock last night. That's, you know, I really like that part of my job description right now includes, like, I have a reason.
Watching Death Clock?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Like, not that I have to make excuses.
Go away, honey. I'm doing research. No,
I'm not that kind of husband and she's not that kind of wife. But in my own mind, you know, I have this, like, oh, I should be doing something. But last night I watched, like, 9 Death Clock episodes and just the whole time just had the satisfaction of, like, I'm working.
Right.
Yeah.
Doing what it's supposed to do.
Yep.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I think that did we talk on the show about how we had this plan to move away from, like, interviewing, you know, Robin Kerner and I don't know, who else do people interview? You know, I mean, I like Robin Kerner, I like Ben Swan, I like, you know, all these, like, but the usual suspects of liberty, I guess I'd call them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
well, we talked about it at the beginning of this show.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we've talked about it before then.
Well, we made a conscious decision about a month ago. I made a conscious decision about a month ago and talked you into it. And it wasn't that hard. But it was like, at first it was a little resistance because you were like, you were really hot to interview some fucking libertarian thinker.
Oh, I don't think so.
Yeah.
You projected that onto me. Fair enough.
Okay, but you did want to interview some libertarian thinker.
Oh, no, I didn't. I wanted to interview the opposite of it. It was Peter Joseph. I thought that Molyneux could have nailed him to the wall hard.
I wanted
to nail Peter Joseph.
That was it.
But no homo,
right.
Odds, all that kind of stuff. And you're like, nah, man, he's D-bag. And, well, I don't want to
okay,
talk
but
about him.
Part of what I said was true because I said, you know, like libertarian regulars, like, you know, the libertarian usual suspects. He is not a libertarian, but he's been interviewed on several libertarian shows.
Yeah. Well, you sold me on it before you pitched the new thing, and you sold me on it by saying that guy doesn't respond to reason in the first place. If you think you're going to reason with him, Molyneux wasn't able to, and it's not because Molyneux's not bad at reason, because obviously he's Stefan Molyneux. You know, he's a debater, and he's good at that. It's just that Peter Joseph doesn't want to hear things. He just wants to go, la, 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 la,
yeah.
Socialist robot paradise.
Yeah, and it was basically, you know, I've said before, I could get anybody on the phone. I can't necessarily get anyone to do an interview. I don't have power over people, but I have an amazing ability to be able to get anybody, no matter how famous or obscure or, like, you know, I don't talk to people, whatever. I can get them on the phone. And I set up all 3 of these interviews in 1 afternoon, and I can do that. And
yeah.
I want to thank Juliet Nail helped out with it too. And
yeah,
some the people at Adrenaline helped out.
You know what though? We should, maybe we should interview some politicians, to like famous politicians.
I want to interview like Michelle Bachmann.
How lame they are.
I want to interview Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Like, or John Boehner.
I think. Okay, what I was going to say is that I can get anybody on the phone, but the fact that we're on radio is actually make it easier to get kind of name interviews.
Right, right.
Now, I think if we're going to try to get politicians, I think we need to be on about 2 or 3 times as many radio stations before we approach them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and once we interview one of them, they probably won't get to interview any others ever. So we should make it a good one.
Yeah. Well, you know that years ago when Stephen Colbert, you know, he does that Better Know a District series.
Ah, uh-huh.
Where he gets, you know, a senator or congressman on and makes fun of them.
Right.
Nancy Pelosi at one point told all the Democrats, do not go on that show.
Oh, really?
And I think that held from, you know, like 6 months before Obama's first election until he was elected. And then she was like, okay, the moratorium is lifted. And he actually talked about it on there. He talked about that she told them not to come on there.
Why do you think she lifted the restriction once Obama was in office?
Because
she thought Colbert would go easier on them?
Because, well, Colbert is a true believer Democrat who plays a true believer Republican.
Right.
But who happens to have the same name as him. Just like, you know, Brendan Small also plays a 7-year-old boy named Brendan Small.
Right.
Which is less the opposite of him than – oh, no. I don't know. Politicians aren't the opposite. They're the same. Republican
the same
Democrat.
As what?
You know, Republican is as different from a Democrat as 7-year-old Brendan Small is less different than 7-year-old Brendan Small is from 40-year-old Brendan Small.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the difference between football player on the Houston Texans and a football player on the New York Giants, you know?
I don't know.
They're both football players. They're different teams and they're in opposition.
Sometimes I think it's more like professional wrestlers who like talk smack and beat each other up in the ring and they go have a beer and have butt sex afterwards.
Is that what professional wrestlers do?
Democrats
do you know
and Republicans.
For a fact? That's yeah. I would believe it's more Democrats than Republicans.
I heard it. I have a source for that.
Do you?
What? Yeah. The internet.
The interwebs. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I say sports teams though because there is a team. There's a my team versus your team kind of thing. I mean, there's like sometimes factions and stuff in pro wrestling, but it's more, you know, I'm this wrestler, you're that wrestler. I think there's a whole lot of team collectivism in modern politics. It's red versus blue instead of goon A versus goon B.
It's capture the flag. Yeah. So they found the name, John Canestrano of Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Am I saying that right? The guy who set himself on fire at the National Mall.
You said Canestrano? In the notes you said Constantino.
Constantino. Thank you.
That's creepy. That's my ex-stepdad's last name. That's my little brother Knight's last name.
Wow. Is it spelled the same?
Exactly the same.
Wow. Well,
unless this is the wrong name and it's actually Castrano, like you said.
No, I cut and pasted it.
Okay.
Well, you know, in the government's Project Mayhem, in death, one has a name.
Okay, his name is John Constantino.
Yes.
Yeah.
His name.
What did you mean by that? You say he's in the government's Project Mayhem? Does the government actually have Project Mayhem?
No, I was making a weird joke, but we could extrapolate on it. I mean, Alex Jones type people, I don't know about Alex Jones in particular, but I know that people who think that everything is controlled by a tribunal instead of just, you know, tyranny is the operative word of the day.
Instead of power corrupts the fact that we all give these people the power to be corrupt and corrupt us.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even want to say Alex Jones, but there are people who believe that a lot of things that have happened lately are like Manchurian candidate type people.
Right.
Like not just never let a crisis go to waste, but actually like they were trained and brainwashed in some government lab and drugged, and then they had a keyword, and when you hear the word oatmeal, you go shoot somebody. You know, if that were true, I think Government Project Mayhem would be a good name for it. Project Mayhem is the name of the in Fight Club, after Fight Club morphs into from just fighting into like destroying rich people's property and changing billboards to tell you to pour motor oil on your lawn.
Right.
It's called Project Mayhem. And in Project Mayhem, a member has a name. Before that, nobody has a name. They're just all space monkeys.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking at the CBS News thing identifying him, and that's all it does is identify him and say his family would like their privacy to be respected. still no word on it. I mean, did the guy write a suicide note? Do we have anything like that?
I think they're hiding it. I think those people in the tribunal who run the world that I don't believe exist in that way, I think that they are hiding it if he wrote one. There's conflicting reports. There's two different witnesses. One is saying that the guy who set himself on fire first set up a little video camera on a tripod and said some words to it and then walked away from it in frame and set himself on fire. And the witness doesn't know what happened to the camera or ran away or something or went to get help or tried to help him and the camera disappeared. Then there's a second witness who said there was a second person there with him, you know, who knew him. They called him an accomplice in the newspaper as if it's a conspiracy to take your own life because the government owns you. But there was a second.
Destroying government property.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Vandalism.
That's the crime.
Or I guess it'd be arson in this case.
Government property. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and in LibPair, I think this would just be like starting a fire on someone else's property without a permit, without permission.
There you go. Well, I mean, I hate to laugh about it because it is tragic.
It's so horrible. I can't not laugh a little bit.
Yeah, that too. But it seems really weird that nobody has any word on why this happened. It seems like all the examples of people doing this in the past they have a reason. They have a story behind it, and they want people to know it, or it's to call attention. I mean, there's the famous example of the monk, you know, that's on the what band is that? The Rage Against the Machine cover, you know, the cover of the Rage Against the Machine album.
Yeah, and the first one. They say that was protesting the Vietnam War, but I think I read somewhere else that it was protesting the Chinese occupation of Tibet.
That's what I thought it was.
Yeah, but
it was during
the Vietnam War. I think the Vietnam War protesters just appropriated it. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. But either way, it just seems like if you were going to do some kind of really public suicide like that, I mean, and how much more public can a suicide get if you plan on just killing yourself and you don't want to take a bunch of people down with you, you know, in some kind of horrible mass shooting. But if you're just going to burn yourself to death, I mean, how much more public does it get than right in front of the National Mall?
Yeah, and
I can't believe that he would just do that randomly without expecting there to be something.
Well, there's the other witness. I didn't finish the other witness, and not that I mind being interrupted. The fiends are all about interrupting. It's what we do, and I'm not being sarcastic.
Yeah, you can always just say Zoom.
Zoom. I forgot Zoom. Oh, you just gave away our safe word, baby doll.
It's all right.
Okay, so Zoom. It's okay. Yeah, but it reminded me because I haven't used it in a few weeks and I forgot it. Yeah, Zoom. So there's another witness who said that another person set up a camera and was talking to the guy, and then the guy said something into the camera and then walked away and lit himself on fire while that person filmed, and that person disappeared or wasn't found or whatever. But regardless, there's two different people saying this was filmed from close up and
that he said words into the camera.
So where is that camera, government? I guess they're shut down. They can't give it to us till they're not shut down anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
They're shut down.
No, I think he said something they don't want people to hear. You know,
Yeah.
I'll bet. Put it this way: if it served the purpose of the government, I think it would have been released on the news.
We would have
already known
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's, I'll bet if it had said, you know, I'm going to lose my home if these Republicans keep the government shut down, my babies are going to starve. I'll bet it would have been on the news that night. Yeah. But if it was anything like, you know, I'm a vet and I'm ashamed of what America's become. Both parties are horrible. We're doomed. You know, they're not going to put that on if it was anything like that, which is just a guess of what it might be. Who knows? But
oh, man, it's just awful.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and take a trip to the market then while we ponder and have a moment of silence.
Okay.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Federal Reserve notes only have value because of a collective hallucination, whereas gold and silver are real, and so is their value. Gold and silver predate government-printed funny money, and they will undoubtedly outlive government-printed funny money. Get some gold and silver into your hands from Midas Resources by going to freedomfiends.com right now and clicking on the Midas Resources banner over on the right. Or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Yo, Nima.
Yeah.
Are you in your windowless bunker?
Sort of. My windows are blocked off with old military surplus foam mats to keep the air conditioner hum from coming through.
You're simulating a windowless bunker. Well, check out the link I just sent you. It's a Google link of a search for windowless bunker in quotes, like for that phrase.
There's two pictures of Michael Dean. One says windowless bunker my ass with red arrows pointing to a blurry window.
Yeah, and then there's one of Adam Lanza, the shooter in Connecticut. That's kind of scary.
Huh. Yeah, that's weird. Why is that there?
Because now we didn't create the phrase windowless bunker. We do come up with a lot of phrases, but I just picked up on that and use it in my intro of the weekend shows. And I'm not in a windowless bunker. I'm actually looking out a window with a really beautiful view of a lot of trees in my backyard and the neighborhood, and the trees changing color to the extent they do in Wyoming, which isn't much. You know, and it's pretty windy out, and there's a lot of kinetic energy out my window. It's calm and wonderful.
Yeah.
But if you search windowless bunker on Google, I'm the first two of four pictures that come up. The fourth one is Adam Lanza as a baby or as a child.
And the first site is a blog post that says windowless bunker my ass. The second is Adam Lanza played Call of Duty in windowless bunker for hours.
First blog post is a Freedom Fiends blog post. So we have co-opted the word, we've made that phrase ours, is what I'm saying, to where we're the first Google result. And Adam Lanza is the second one. Third one is about Adam Lanza. Fourth one is some sports thing. Fifth one is a Facebook page about Nima's windowless bunker. Sixth one is a Fox News thing that says, clever tech used to surveil windowless bunker.
We should probably become aware of that so we can protect our windowless bunkers.
But that page is 404. In hostage rescue, it says.
Ooh.
So it's been deleted by the Central Scrutinizer. Hey, did you see that thing about Canada's like equivalent of the NSA super place in Utah?
No. Is it bigger? Or is it just more Canadian? I imagine it'd be easier to do one in Canada because they could put it like near the North Pole and they wouldn't have to spend a bunch of resources keeping it cool.
Yeah. Well, it's nicer. It's like they're spending like $1 billion on something that's going to have like 1,000 people. Like they're spending $1 million per person for an office building. Basically.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. And the glass is really nice. Here it is. Inside Canada's top secret $1 billion spy palace. Yeah. And this is on the CBC site, which is Canadian broad. It's PBS of Canada. It's national. And they're letting them leak it. The dinosaur doesn't know that it's chewing on its own tail.
Oh, it's just proposed though, right? This is
They're making it.
They are making
it's a very polite dinosaur chewing on its own tail.
There you go. Speaking of the NSA's giant data center in Utah, are you aware of
delays?
I was going to say there's a campaign right now and a radio ad that's hilarious by Michael Bolden of the 10th Amendment Center.
I like him.
Yeah, and in the radio ad, it's like all these sound effects of water, and he's talking about all the water resources it takes to cool all of those servers, you know, because it's a giant supercomputer. And I don't remember the number, but he says
it's not green.
Where does the water come from? He says the state of Utah is providing all of that water to the government. And he says our message to the state of Utah, turn it off.
Yeah.
And he brings up a good point that there's nothing that's holding the state of Utah responsible for providing the water to this federal facility that's violating the Fourth Amendment.
Well, there also might be there's not a lot of water in Utah. I mean, the Mountain West is kind of parched. And I don't know that he's done his research on that, because the water rights for rivers in the Mountain West are really screwy. Like basically the water in the Platte River is owned by either Nebraska or Colorado, like even what flows through Wyoming. Wyoming gets to use some of their own river, but it's one of the things that the first woman governor of Wyoming, and I think it was the first woman governor in America, you know, in the 1800s, there was a woman Democrat governor in Wyoming. And one of the great things she's known for is negotiating the deal to sell Wyoming's water to a nearby state.
Wow. Well, I would assume that a state as powerful as Utah in the region, because Utah is one of the power players in the Mountain West. I mean, it's not Podunk, a bunch of Mormons living in the woods anymore. I mean, Utah's a power player. So it wouldn't surprise me if the state of Utah owned the water rights to its portion of the Colorado River.
Yeah, but Utah was founded by people who basically circumvented their religion to please the government. I mean,
yeah, that's why I'm saying that they are obviously acquiescing to the Fed's whims, and I doubt they would stop. But it brings up an interesting tactic, and he's going to try to expand this, Michael Bolden of the 10th Amendment Center, to all the different – because it's not just the data center in Utah. You know, they've got a facility in Tennessee. They're building a big one in San Antonio. And in all of these places, they're relying on local or state government resources for their utilities and all this kind of stuff.
You know,
and he's saying it'd be a lot easier to get the local folks – to petition their local and state governments than it would be to tell the NSA to please stop spying on us.
Think about it's kind of interesting. Michael Bolden from the 10th Amendment Center is on the SPLC's hit list as one of the problematic Americans. I'm envious because why aren't we? And it's like he's basically saying obey the Constitution, and we're saying that old thing, that doesn't go far enough. And where's our page? Where's our parade on the SPLC's website? But do you remember when you were a newsman here in Wyoming? I'm a hard-hitting newsman. When you were
some of it, yeah.
When you were Jimmy Olsen, some of it. If you remember your career, you weren't really a newsman. That's a drinking joke. Do you remember that there were headlines for a blip for a minute about Southern Wyoming getting a large data center, and then it never happened? I think that they pitched that here, and I think there was just too much, they did some focus grouping, and just there was too much.
I don't think that the folks in Wyoming would push back that far on it, because they think of the money, and they would think, oh, it's going to bring jobs, it's going to revitalize us. And there's already nobody in Wyoming gets angry that there's missile silos under the ground with nuclear weapons in them. They're happy that there's people there to work there,
And Boston Tea Party took it even further in his book Mulan Labe. Spoiler alert, cover your ears if you haven't read it. The libertarian governor of Wyoming has his libertarian oath keepers in the military at that base steal 3 nukes to park in D.C. to make them leave Wyoming alone.
right. Okay, here we go. Here's some non-partisan, non-Michael Bolden information on it. The Salt Lake Tribune says that they are having issues getting the water to the data center right now. So there is weakness there. It says, when operational, the Utah Data Center is expected to consume 1.7 million gallons a day in order to cool the people and technology inside. But so far, Bluffdale City Manager Mark Reed says water consumption has been wildly inconsistent.
When they say consume, does that mean the water's unusable, or does it mean it's hot and has to be cooled before it can be dumped back into places fish live, or does it mean they'll dump it back anyway and it'll kill all the fish and grow a lot of algae and cause problems?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean,
is it turned to steam and you don't have it anymore until it rains, or what? I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't know what it means either, because I would figure if a private organization, a company, or person were building some kind of giant, massive data center, they would have some kind of water recycling system, right? After the water goes through, it goes into a cooling pond, it gets reused. I mean, I don't know if this is just going into the sewer
generally
or going straight back to the reclamation plant or what.
Water cooling systems are generally closed as far as
I
know.
That's what I would think.
I would especially think that with something that is – high intensity security government stuff, you wouldn't want water flowing into it
to
all
be dependent
day
right
from a river that could be dammed or could be poisoned, or someone could pour explosives into it, or any number of things, or they could pour LSD into it and it could end up in the water coolers. I don't know, man.
Right. Well, apparently they are having a ton of problems, though. They've enlisted the Army Corps of Engineers to come and try to figure out how they can fix some problems, like problems with the electrical system, and maybe that's related to the water,
too. The Army Corps of Engineers are a brilliant example of people who are experts in things that are wrong. Like, the Army Corps of Engineers can build fucking unreal things really quickly, and can figure out how to do them when it would be harder to do probably in the free market the way things are now in the not free market, because the Army Corps of Engineers can bribe with stolen money the best of the best and spend, just throw money at something. But
throw money at it, yeah.
They come up with solutions that are sometimes ridiculous, and sometimes they do them and sometimes they don't. One that they didn't do that they almost did was in the 60s, when there was an influx of people coming to San Francisco because of the hippie days. They wanted to house the hippies. They wanted to be able to house people. You know, the housing was in short supply. The Army Corps of Engineers drew up a plan to fill in the San Francisco Bay and make it all a landfill except for a tiny canal in the middle of it. That would have fucked things up bad, man, everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
That would have had, like, far-reaching, unpredictable consequences.
Hmm. So, I don't know if maybe Michael Bolden is wrong when he says the state of Utah, because it looks like it's the city of Bluffdale that's supposed to provide the water. And maybe they're doing it under the auspices of some state grant or state fund. But also, this is kind of interesting. Bluffdale actually reclaims the wastewater from the Utah data center and will use it to water city parks. So the grass that your kids are playing in is going to be dirty NSA water.
It's going to be dirty, filthy, immoral NSA water. I know. Right. Well, think about that. Like that, it may not have contaminants in it, but holy water is just water. But it's water blessed by a priest, and it is considered by Catholics to be different than water. So I would think that water that's passed through the NSA spy bot central scrutinizer would be unholy water.
Unholy water.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We should pitch that to the Mormons. Maybe they'll kick the Utah data center out. I can't. I mean, I don't
they
know.
Had their chance to kick the government out in the 1800s, man.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I mean, they didn't. They went to war with them. They went to war with them and were losing and said, okay, we'll only have one wife each. And then they said, all right, we'll give you the crappy part of Utah and we'll keep the parts that have the gold for ourselves.
Yeah. And it's silver. Really strange to me how communities with a history of enmity with or you know being in opposition to the federal state, after they lose or surrender, they all of a sudden become big boosters of the military state. And I'm thinking of, the Mormons here in this case, and the Native Americans. You know, Native Americans by per capita are the biggest people to join the military per capita. And what else?
The poverty draft.
A lot of it could be the poverty draft. And I'm also thinking of Southerners. I mean, not all Southerners, but a lot of them, you know, that's kind of the stereotype. I don't know how true this is. I live in Texas, which is kind of the South, but you know, people in the South being uber patriotic, willing to send their sons off to die in Uncle Sam's wars. And I don't know.
It's so bizarre to me that Native Americans have such a high incidence of joining the military. When you think about the history, I mean, I'm laughing, but it's horrible. The history of the Native Americans and America. I mean,
right.
It was basically like, you know, and I wanted to talk a little about Manifest Destiny, and that's a good segue. Do you know about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's horrible, horrible, horrible.
Do you know the term adventurism or the term white man's burden?
I know white man's burden. Yeah.
Yeah. White man's burden is like the English version of Manifest Destiny. Manifest Destiny was the idea that white American settler Christians had an edict
destiny,
from God to go west to the ocean and civilize and conquer everything in between. And that basically meant, oh, there's a great country here. It's here free for our taking. As soon as we machine gun, you know, as soon as we gun down all of these engines.
As soon as we exterminate the savages.
Yeah, and then take the ones that were, you know, not the ones that lived and, like, take their children away from them and put them in schools where they're beaten if they speak their native language.
Yeah.
Yeah. Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, if you look into the history of the Indian schools, it's just horrible.
That's
and,
when you go to the
atrocity
Cody,
after atrocity.
The Cody Museum in Cody, Wyoming has a really good exhibit on that.
They still exist.
For something made by the white man.
Right. I don't think they are the same as they used to be, but the actual school buildings still exist as schools on some parts, at least in the Wind River Indian Reservation where I lived in Wyoming. There was the St. Stephen's School, and I'm pretty sure it was one of the traditional Indian schools of assimilating the red man into white culture.
Yeah, and then the white man's burden was Let me look up the Wikipedia on that to give it more accurate than I can do from memory. I mean, basically, I described it to my wife as the belief that you need to civilize primitive cultures by bringing them electricity, taxes, and smallpox.
Right,
the phrase comes from a poem by Rudyard Kipling.
Yeah. Yes.
Who was someone we studied in school. And it was basically the idea – his poem – talked about the white man's burden, the burden that, you know, that he is the civilized, more intelligent species or subspecies and needs to go to Africa and help these poor savages and bring them, you know, electricity, taxes, and smallpox. And there was an actual burden to it. But he also warned, you know, had somber warnings of the cost involved. And on the Wikipedia page, there is a picture of something from 1890s, it is a soap company. It's called Pears Soap. And the picture is, it says, the white man's burden. Like, as a civilized adventurer of the world, it is your duty to buy this soap and bring it to those savages. It has a picture of white man handing this, standing, handing it to a native who's sitting in the mud, basically.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's just awful.
And then it shows a ship parked on the shore with boxes and boxes and boxes of Pears soap.
Yes. Like, let's read some of the promotional literature on this soapbox. It says,
right.
The first step towards lightening the white man's burden is through teaching the virtues of cleanliness. Pears soap is a potent factor in brightening the dark corners of the earth as civilization advances. Ugh. While amongst the cultured of all nations, it holds the highest place. It is the ideal toilet soap.
You know, you know that Africa is still called the Dark Continent, and it was not called the Dark Continent because of the color of the skin of people on it. It was called the Dark Continent because back in the day, it was the least explored part of the world, and on maps, right, it would just be dark, like no lines
like
on it. Just
we don't know what's
the
here.
Shape of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But I guess by 1890s, they were bringing them soap.
And trading the soap for slaves.
God,
is that what they're doing?
Read some of this poem, man. It's hideous.
The White Man's Burden?
Yes.
Okay.
As read by Nima Vedati.
All right. Take up the white man's burden. Send forth the best, ye breed. Go bind your sons to exile to serve your captive's need. To wait in heavy harness on fluttered folk and wild, your new-caught, sullen peoples, half-devil, half-child.
I can't listen anymore. Okay, I can, but that's fucking horrid. Go on.
It really is, yeah. Second stanza. Take up the white man's burden, the savage wars of peace. Fill full the mouth of famine and bid the sickness cease. And when your goal is nearest, the end for others sought, watch sloth and heathen folly bring all your hopes to naught. Wow, so what's he saying there? We're going to try like hell to civilize, but nothing's going to happen. They're going to remain lazy and heathens. Is that what he's saying?
I would say that people in uncontacted tribes in Africa were probably in the 1890s were probably anything but lazy, because you'd be dead if you were lazy. You know, in a hunter gatherer society, the lazy die. You know, right. I think he means they're lazy because they're not picking rubber trees for English people.
Right. Because they don't want to work for the white man.
Yeah.
They don't want to be burdened by the white man. Yeah, I guess to a native, the white man's burden means something very different. It means the burden of having white men on your shores. Ah, man, we got white people now. What are we going
to
do?
You know, there's a film called The White Man's Burden that I have a tertiary connection to, like I try to attach a tertiary connection to anything famous of mine that that isn't mine. But no, I do have a connection.
6 degrees of Michael Dean.
3 degrees of Michael Dean in this case. It is a very little known John Travolta film with John Travolta and Harry Belafonte, where it basically takes place in a world where black and white roles are reversed. Like, you know, The blacks are the people with money, and the whites are their hired servants. It takes place in modern times, but like there's a scene that I really remembered from it was there's like a little white kid watching TV, and everyone on TV is black, you know, and it's made in 1995. And my tertiary connection to it is the screenplay, and was written. The film was written and directed by Desmond Nakano, who was the screenwriter of the Selby movie Last Exit to Brooklyn. He adapted Selby's novel Last Exit to Brooklyn to a screenplay, and I interviewed him in Last Exit to Brooklyn and went to his house to do it, or interviewed him for the Selby movie. And I interviewed him twice. Here's what happened. We interviewed him once, and the tape failed. We were filming on mini DV, and the tape failed and was like, we could look at it, but the audio wasn't usable on it. So what we did was we like edited it into the movie, and we were going to try to figure out a way to fix the sound or something, and we just couldn't fix it. So we called him up and said, we need to have you do some of the stuff over again, and we need to have you wear the same shirt. And we just came over and like filmed it, and we used some of the original film and then some of the other and like faked it, and it worked perfectly. Like nobody would know that that's how we did that unless I gave you that director's commentary.
Okay. Well, we appreciate the director's commentary.
He had an awesome house. He also had on his walls, this was kind of interesting, he had what looked like a bunch of Basquiat paintings. You know,
Basquiat?
Basquiat, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was like, are those – I recognized them. I'm like, are those Basquiat originals? And he's like, no, they're the Basquiat reproductions that were painted and used in the movie Basquiat.
Oh, well, I guess it's kind of cool too.
It is kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, rappers love to rap about Basquiat nowadays.
Are there any rap songs called The White Man's Burden? I'm surprised there aren't. It's such a
there might be.
Like racially charged aspect of history. Now, read about adventurism. This other – it's kind of related. The White Man's Burden, adventurism, and manifest destiny. Read about the term – I'd never heard the term adventurism. It sounds good, but it's not.
Yeah. Adventurism is a pejorative referring to politics or activism that involves reckless or irresponsible behavior or conduct pursued only in the interest of excitement. Adventurism is often used as a criticism against some government policies. Countries pursuing foreign wars of dubious merit or which have little chance of success have often been accused of adventurism by opponents. In the Canadian context, foreign adventurism has found only marginal support amongst the general population. A notable exception is found in Corporal Hillier, who has been accused of modern-day jingoism stemming from his proposals to use decentralized Canadian forces units to conduct resource extraction raids on developing countries. Huh. Kind of mind-blowing. Is this written by a Canadian?
It might be. I don't know. I like when we have Canadian... That's our second Canadian thing today, because we do have listeners in Canada, a bunch of them, and we got Ed and Ethan, our friends to the north, and I don't think we're on any stations anymore that reach into Canada. We were on that 150,000 watt one, but.
Who is Corporal Hillier? I've never heard of that.
There's a
modern day Canadian who's trying to go to third world countries and extract resources?
Well, isn't that what Halliburton does?
Yeah, but. Not openly through a politician. I mean, Halliburton does that, but the face of Halliburton doing that is George Bush saying we've got to go smoke the terrorists out of their holes.
And Barack Obama saying the same thing. Yeah.
And there's a lot of white man's burden in the way the foreign adventurism of modern day imperial America works, isn't there? I mean, isn't that what the Syria thing is?
Yeah.
I mean, you hear people defending it back in the day before Barack Obama was smacked down by people saying no, no, no. People were saying, well, what do we do about those poor Syrians? How can we turn our backs on those poor Syrians?
You know, that description of adventurism reminds me of a T-shirt that I had in the 90s that was from the 70s that I'd gotten at a secondhand store. And the T-shirt said, join the army, travel to exotic lands, meet unusual people, and kill them.
That's real? I thought that was a joke.
Well, it was a T-shirt that was political activism against the military.
Okay,
but,
okay.
You know, it reminds me of that. Like, join the army, see the world, have adventure, you know, adventurism. I think it's another word for interventionism, but maybe a little different. Yeah.
Wow. So, white man's burden, bad. Adventurism, bad.
Yeah.
Freedom fiends?
Good. So, if we're off this, I want to talk about the Sheldon Cooper show more.
I'm sure you do. What do you have about the Sheldon Cooper show?
I watched all 6 seasons and the latest from season 7, and then I started over again. There's new episodes up now, too, every Thursday night. But I want to say that I'm suffering from Sheldon Freuden. Okay. That means I just can't get enough of that show. Big Bang Theory.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sheldon Freudin.
Hmm. It is, they're nice little chunklets of humor, you know.
Yeah, like 20 minutes, and 22 and minutes.
Yeah, and they're good to, you know, it's good escapism.
It really is.
Yeah. I feel like you watch Breaking Bad and it's escapism, but you're immersed in this world where you feel strong feelings and emotions and your jaw drops, and it's kind of intensive. But Big Bang, you know, you'll laugh and you'll chuckle, and then you'll forget about what happened.
I also want to say I have a follow-up. I talked a couple weeks ago about how I was looking out the window during the show, and I saw the, like, 7-year-old, 9-year-old kid next door hitting what looked like a cell phone with a plastic baseball bat and then throwing it up on their roof. And I was like, I'm not going to tell the neighbor. Like, what I meant, and people criticized me for that, what I meant was I'm not going to go over there right now and tell him. But I did see him and talk to him out front and told him about that, and he appreciated it, and he got it down, and I saw him later, and he said, yeah, it was a toy cell phone. It was like a, you know, Billy's first training cell phone kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I figured it had to be something small and meaningless, or something the kid could have done that with. I don't know.
Yeah,
I guess talking to your neighbor's not a big ding, but yeah, it's the kid's toy. You can throw it on the roof if he wants. I mean, I guess it's his dad's roof, but I don't think people care about something like that on their roof, do they?
No. You know, we never talked about this. This got pushed down the notes, but Reason TV interviewed Lusander Fien, our friend and blogger and sometimes correspondent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, on a Detroit thing, right?
Yeah, and it's a 4-part thing with him and Katie Testa, who we had on the show one day. I will post that in the show notes.
Definitely.
Yeah. So did you see that Hillary Clinton scrubbed herself from a film, or like made it chill factor, chilled it?
She scrubbed herself? I thought they dropped it because nobody would have watched it.
Yeah, like nobody.
Well, she did.
She put out the word somehow, like, don't talk to this guy. Like nobody. Nobody would talk to the guy.
Wow. Well, Saturday Night Live did a joke about that last weekend when they had Miley Cyrus on.
What was it?
They were doing – it was Piers Morgan, and Piers's guest was Arianna Huffington. And it was kind of funny. They kind of ripped Piers a little bit. And then but Arianna Huffington was on to talk about all the other Hillary documentaries and TV shows in production. And they were pretty funny. It was like a Fox News one where Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton break into the White House, and Hillary talks about what a flesh-eating monster she is. Just really over-the-top ridiculous stuff. And it was worth a chuckle or two.
Yeah. You got anything else? I got one more line, but I'll save it. I'll let you I'll let you go. You got anything else there? Ooh, I just turned up my treble. It's been down all day. It's going to stay here. I like this better. Sounds better, huh?
Yeah. There's a little bit more room tone, but we're a lively show. You know, we're not NPR. We don't try to sound dead.
We don't try to sound like we're in a media tomb like NPR.
Yeah, yeah. Did you want to talk at all about this Common Core thing? I know a lot of people have been riffing off of that, but
hang on a sec.
They're trying to...
Let me stop this and come back.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations, and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Do you want to raise your children outside of the government indoctrination camps that are today's public schools? Check out the Ron Paul Curriculum link over on the right of freedomfiends.com. The Ron Paul Curriculum is a liberty-based K-12 homeschool course. It covers history, liberty, geography, math, science, and free market economics. Kindergarten through fifth grade are free. Then it's only $250 per family per year. Click on the Ron Paul Curriculum link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Yeah, let's talk about Common Core. And then I got one thing to say was about, we were talking about hiring lawyers or not last week. And DJ said something great about hiring lawyers. She said, if you're going into the belly of the beast, it's good to have someone who speaks beast. Mm. I really like that.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yep.
Yeah. And that makes total sense, man. It's a translator, you know, just like if you're going into the jungle, belly of the beast, all that kind of stuff. She hits the nail on the head with that.
You know, the thing about the white man's burden, I wanted to add on that, is I feel like politicians still have that, but it's not the white man's burden. It's the non-government employees' burden. It's the, like, it's the common hoi polloi's burden. Like, no matter what the skin color, that doesn't matter. But it's like the people in power feel like they have to civilize us savages in Wyoming and protect us and take away our deer rifles and make sure that we pay for our health care.
Yeah, and they completely brush our teeth. That they're the Ubermen, the Ubermenschen, and they know what's best for us. And those podunk folks in flyover country would be eating dirt if it weren't for our handouts and farm subsidies.
Yeah.
I totally buy that they think that. Yep. But the reason people are dumb, if they are dumber, is because the government controls the schools. And one of the things that's kind of heinous is this Common Core stuff, which is trying to replace, I guess, a lot of the basics that are taught and standardize them.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at it on Wikipedia. It's a Common Core State Standards Initiative.
Okay.
And it's not part of No Child Left Behind.
It's not. Okay. Okay. Is it a government thing or is it a textbook creator thing? I can't tell yet.
It's a U.S. education initiative. It's sponsored by Council of Chief State School Officers and the National Governors Association. Sounds government to me.
Government, but not by statute or by law, just supported by the government.
It's probably a thing where they don't get money if they don't use it. I don't know. Let's see. Adaptation by states.
Okay. Well, whatever it is, it's in a lot of schools.
It's a thing that people are doing whether they're forced to or not.
Right. Let's see. Yeah, okay. So EAG News says the assignment is part of the Common Core State Standards Initiative, an attempt by educrats to standardize various K through 12 curricula across the country. 45 states and the District of Columbia have begun implementing the curriculum. So it's widespread. And this is according to the Daily Caller, who are pretty partisan in their stuff, but they generally don't lie any more than the normal lies. But here's the thing. There's some pretty heinous stuff in a lot of this Common Core textbooks. And one of the things they pointed out recently, the Daily Caller did, was a handbook where there's an assignment that says the Bill of Rights is outdated. And it sets up this scenario where you are tasked with removing two of the Bill of Rights amendments and replacing them with two new ones. And in the article, there's, the obligatory parent complaining about this, like, I can't believe my daughter told me she doesn't even know what the Bill of Rights is. I'm so angry. And I thought, well, first of all, you as a parent have a responsibility to teach your kids stuff, you know, not just the schools. If you outsource it completely to the schools, this is what the kids are going to learn. They're not going to know what the Bill of Rights is. They're just going to be told it's outdated and they have to change it.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised they even go as far as to show the kids the Bill of Rights and tell them to replace two of them. And I am willing to predict that within a few years, it's not going to be that. It's going to be – there used to be a thing called the Constitution. Let's write a new one. What would you put in it? Without – I'm serious. I'm joking, but right, I'm serious. Right. I think I think someone will decide it's dangerous to even show them those 10 amendments.
Right, right. Well, yeah, that's what it'll be. It'll be the amendments, because the Constitution is just fine. I mean, it sets up the government. It says there will be a president and he will hold power, and there will be a Congress and they will tell you what to do. Now, the Constitution's crap. I mean, the Bill of Rights is the only halfway decent thing in it.
And I actually saw in passing somewhere a photo someone uploaded of that they took with their cell phone of what was in their daughter's middle school textbook. This may be related to this or it may not, but it was an explanation. It didn't even have the Bill of Rights. It had, it had like explanations of them. What did it have for the Second Amendment?
Yeah, this is the same thing. It's the Common Core. I'm pretty sure. And it's in a high school AP history class. So this is for the smart
advanced
kids.
Placement. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. The Second Amendment, instead of having the actual Bill of Rights, it has sort of descriptions of what they are. And here's what it says for the Second Amendment. The people have the right to keep and bear arms in a state militia.
That's so ridiculous. That interpretation by modern gun haters of the Second Amendment is so ridiculous to me, because no country anywhere in the world feels a need to write down that their army can have guns. You know?
Right,
you know?
Right,
do you think in China and Iran they have a written piece of paper?
That's in their constitution. Our soldiers will be allowed to carry guns no matter what you think or say.
I know.
Say.
I mean, I've pointed out, a lot of people don't even think about this, but like, of all the atrocities of war, there's like, when they go into a country, you know, they're not only going in and taking it over and killing people and fucking things up and destroying infrastructure, they're also like trespassing and violating the gun laws of that country, you know? Like,
oh, yeah.
No one even thinks about that. It's kind of like, I heard someone once describe, you know, the dangers of cigarette smoking and said, like, this applies everywhere but in a crack house. In a crack house, smoking cigarettes is like eating candy somewhere else. You know,
right, and
in the context of war, you know, violating the gun laws of the country you're in is kind of like eating candy. It's not even considered.
Right.
But I'm just pointing that out to point out that what country in the world thinks they have to write down that their army can have guns?
Yeah. 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 So it's really even a bastardization of the other argument, because the people who are anti-Second Amendment say people can have their guns in case they are part or are supposed to be called up for the militia, or does the left liberal people not even go that far?
They go different places with it. One common one that I've heard of is they say that's what it was for, but that's no longer apt because we have the National Guards.
Standing army.
Well, no, because we have the state National Guards, which are federally controlled now. But yeah, like each state has a militia that's literally kind of like a militia, but it's not really, because it's organized. It's professional. They receive a paycheck, whereas militias didn't. I mean, they were fed when they were called up, but it was something you did out of a sense of duty to protect your area when the Constitution was written. And it wasn't you get health, dental, and, you know, all this cool stuff and money and cool toys.
Yeah. Wasn't a career move.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And, but it is the National Guards are a kind of weird, amorphous, like, bastardization of that, because the people aren't regular army. They're not somewhere for years at a time in barracks. They live at home, and then, you know, they go through some training, and then they go one weekend a month and go on maneuvers, and then they go back to their day job selling insurance and shoes. So they
they get called up, they do deploy National Guard units.
Yeah,
The feds will call upon the first sweeps piece I ever did was in Wyoming, and it was when the National Guard from Lander, the ones out of the base in Lander, were going to Afghanistan, or maybe it was Kuwait.
Ones here are all over there, because every time you drive by the National Guard thing here, it looks empty. There's like a tank and one car in the parking lot.
Right, right. And that's actually one of – we were talking about Michael Bolden earlier in the 10th Amendment thing. That's another tactic that they're trying to push people to take is take back the guard movements. You know, the states could theoretically and by laws decide not to allow their National Guardsmen to be exported overseas by the feds anymore.
Yeah, that wouldn't –
they never would,
it wouldn't work too
because
well.
They get so much money and weapons and things like that from the
and
feds.
And glory.
So. And well, what they perceive as glory, but really just PTSD.
You know, I've heard that Wyoming has it's definitely the lowest population state. It's like under 600,000 in this big giant state. But I've heard two interesting things that maybe or may not be connected. One is that this state had the highest per capita dollar donation to the Ron Paul campaign. I've also heard that this state has the highest per capita of people joining the military. And maybe that's because there's so many Indian reservations here.
And, just the one. It's just a really big one.
It's huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's two tribes here.
Mm-hmm. But they share a reservation. And they kind of – there's some animosity. Like I forget what the history is, but I think the reservation was originally promised to the Shoshone, and at the last minute they threw the Arapaho in there too.
And then there's Juggalos.
There's also Juggalos.
There's Native American Juggalos.
Right. Oh, Native American Juggalos. Yeah, yeah. Do you think Juggalos per capita are more likely to join the military so they can just blow stuff up?
No.
Because that's what they're into?
I don't think they'd have the discipline. I mean, I don't want to diss Juggalos, and I'm I'm assuming that from
we're
like
just playing with you Juggalos,
watching a few videos, yeah.
Oh, but okay,
yeah. You know, I think it'd be like, I don't want to die in your war. I want to die in my own war.
Yeah, I want to die of diabetes by drinking too much Faygo.
I don't know what that is. Oh, I do.
Faygo's that cheap soda.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, Common Core. It's neither common nor core. Well, it is common, but it's not core.
It's common.
I mean, I'm kind of offended by the idea of requiring standardization of education. It's so one size fits all federally, you know?
See, that's what I'm trying to find out, and I haven't found a good answer. I mean, I've just started looking at it now, like 10 minutes ago.
Well, read the criticism section.
Is it a requirement?
It says, the Common Core has drawn criticism from across the political spectrum, from the Brookings Institute to the Libertarian Cato Institute. So basically, conservatives and libertarians don't like it. Conservatives don't like it because they want to educate their kids in their Christian ways, in their Republican ways, and libertarians don't like it on principle because they don't want to be told what to do with their kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just an initiative right now is what Wiki says. So I think that means it's still up to the district
Bottom. It says how many states have formally adopted it, how many haven't. Most states have formally adopted it. Nebraska will not adopt. Oklahoma tentatively withdrew. Virginia will not adopt. There's like five other states that will not adopt. But all the other states, including Wyoming, have formally adopted it. Texas is a non-member of this thing.
Okay.
Texas is the only one that says non-member. And I'm sure, you know, the ones that haven't adopted it are states that people in New York and LA generally think of as like hicks who need to be civilized.
Right.
And I'm sure they're going to say, see, they don't want this education we're trying to bestow upon them.
Oh, I'm sure they will. Yeah. Yeah. The white man's burden.
I got one last thing to say. It's kind of tacitly off that, and then we're over our time here, so I think we should wrap it up, B. There's a documentary series out now on Nat Geo or one of those channels about snake-handling Baptist sects. You know, the people...
Snake-handling Baptists? That's a thing?
You've never heard of that? Of people who handle poisonous serpents in church services?
In, like, India.
Are you serious?
Appalachia. Oh, in Appalachia. Okay.
You've never heard of snake handling? Where have you been, man? They do it in Texas.
Not in Appalachia.
They also do it in Texas for non-religious, just for thrill seeking. They have like snake roundups. But there's a gospel. There's a part in the Mark and Luke that support that are behind this. It says, "And these signs shall follow them that believe. In my name shall they cast out devils. Shall they speak in tongues? Shall they speak in new tongues? They shall take up serpents, and if they drink any deadly thing, it shall not hurt them. And they shall lay hands on the sick, and the sick shall recover." That's from Mark 16:17-18. And Luke 10:19 says, "Behold, I give unto you the power to tread on serpents and scorpions, and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you." And there are some churches in Appalachia that take this literally, and you know, for the past like 100 years or so, have done this, like they handle church like rattlesnakes and copperheads in their church service, and if they get bit. You know, some of them consider that especially good because they survive it. A lot of them have just built up a
Can you build up a tolerance?
Yes. By drinking small amounts of it or getting, you know, like inject skin popping it, I think. But there's not a lot of them. I mean, there's probably, I would guess, 500 to 1,000 people in America, maybe, that do this regularly. And it's, I can't believe you've never heard of it. I mean, it's like, they make fun of it.
Hold on. They occasionally consume poisons such as strychnine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
But it's illegal in every state in Appalachia except West Virginia. Huh. And people make, you know, people from the big cities make hella jokes about like, yeah, West Virginia tried to outlaw it and didn't. And West Virginia also, Ben Stone told me, we were talking about this today. It's either West Virginia or some other state in Appalachia. I think it's West Virginia. Actually, like they had a law against eating roadkill and then they rescinded the law. Basically, so when you hit a deer with your truck, you don't have to waste the meat. You can eat it. But people made tons of jokes like, oh, those West Virginians want to eat skunk, you know, and possum.
Hey, it's green. I wonder if they could rehash that and get away with it this time.
I know.
It's sustainable.
Yeah, but this is done – the snake handling is done in Alabama, Georgia, Kentucky, Tennessee, West Virginia, and Ohio. Now, there's – it's illegal in all those states except West Virginia. And I was watching a little bit of this documentary last night. And the pastor from one of these churches was trying to get it legalized or get a permit to do it or something. And I just thought, man, we should interview that guy. But then I thought, you know what? Ben should interview that guy on his show.
Because
Ben
yes.
knows the gospel. We don't know the gospel. We're not Christians. And Ben's, you know, I said, Ben, you should call one of these churches up, talk to them, and basically tell them, you know, I'm a Christian. I don't take Mark 16:17 literally, but I believe it should be legal for you to do it. Let's talk on my show.
Yeah. Well, it's not even about taking it literally, is it? I mean,
it's taking it literally.
I guess so. And these signs shall follow them that believe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, I thought it meant like I will give certain people this power at some point, and they're trying to force themselves.
Well, it might be that too, because the other things that are mentioned in there. Like speaking in tongues, not everyone has the power for that, according to these people.
Is that a power?
You never heard of speaking in tongues?
I've heard of it. It's just gibberish. How can you not fake it?
I've heard it done. I think the girl was faking herself into believing it. But a Christian girl I used to date spoke in tongues, and I overheard her doing it once.
What, isn't it just gibberish?
Yeah, it just sounded like gibberish.
It's not impressive. I don't see how saying nonsense words would impress anyone.
Well, I don't know, man. She believed it like I believe the sky is blue, man.
Wow. And speaking of legality, here's also a really interesting thing about it. Snake handling was made a felony punishable by death in Georgia in 1949.
Wow.
After a 7-year-old girl died of a rattlesnake bite. But get this. The punishment was so severe that juries refused to convict, and the law was repealed in 1968. So it's jury nullification saved the snake handlers in Georgia.
Yeah, and a lot of places it's just like a $50 or $100 fine. Or in Kentucky, it's a $50 or $100 fine. But, yeah, I mean, I would just say practice it in private. But, you know, they want to have a church that's open to the public. And I would like to hear Ben's take on that if he interviewed. I suggested to him that he look up the church that's in that documentary and call a different church, because that guy is probably inundated with interview requests and death threats and I hope you die threats and, you know, but finally.
This makes people angry. Why does it make people angry?
I don't know. I don't look at it as anything more ridiculous than jumping out of an airplane with a parachute. I mean, it might be a little more dangerous, but. Or camping in bear country, or like, you know, extreme fighting or motocross.
Or dudes in circuses going in the ball with the motorcycle. Or
rollerball. That's not a thing,
ball,
man.
Yeah. No, but in circuses. You've been to the circuses where they have the guy in the motorcycle and he goes upside down in the metal tube.
In the ball, yeah. Oh, you know, we should ask Brendan Small about the movie Rollerball. It seems like it influenced Death Clock and Metalocalypse in some way.
Okay.
I'll put that in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sony's. All right. I think we're good, man.
As long as you touched on snakes, I think we're good.
I touched your snake. All right. Worms. All right, worms and serpents.
Peace.
Peace.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me and that includes endorphins. Someone won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share-alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Three times a week, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati share their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.